Good morning. Good morning. My name's Anna and I am a member of Encounter Church in Winchcombe. And I'm speaking this morning to you as part of an ongoing series that we've been in called Life. Last week, Mark spoke about the integral nature of rest and how that's so important to our the rhythms of life. And how we do life. And the week before, I think, Marie spoke on prayer, the importance of prayer. And today I'm looking at how letting go of the past enables us to experience, or gives us the opportunity to experience more of the life that God has for us. And how indeed being vulnerable about our past can be a courageous thing. I want to look at some of the things that hold us back, and predominantly fear, and how we might be able to move forward. And the topic, the title rather, I've given to this talk is Going for Gold. So we'll start with the scripture that I've chosen, which is in Corinthians. It's 2 Corinthians 3:18, and I'll read it to you now. Whenever, though, they turn their face to God, as Moses did, God removes the veil, and there they are, face to face. They suddenly recognise that God is a living, personal presence and not a piece of chiselled stone. And when God is personally present, a living spirit, that old constricting legislation is recognised as obsolete. We are free of it, all of us. Nothing between us and God. Our faces shining with the brightness of his face. Our lives gradually becoming more and more beautiful as God enters and we become more like him. Isn't that just a lovely phrase? Our faces shining with the brightness of his face. Our lives gradually becoming brighter and more beautiful as God enters. So firstly, to the things that can hold us back, and I'm going to start by sharing a vulnerable personal example with you, and that is that I have a fear of public speaking. And in doing this, this is me pressing into that fear and making an agreement with myself and with God that I'm going to meet this challenge and hopefully grow through the experience. I'm going to share my thoughts in three sections. So firstly, my / our past. Secondly, my / our present. And finally, my / our future. So a little bit of vulnerability about my past. My early life consisted in living in a bedsit, working in some pretty dead-end jobs, and really living with a high degree of self-sufficiency, having left home at a really young age, not done particularly well at school. In fact, I left school with one GCSE in art. And I had kind of believed the message that I wouldn't amount to much, and that if I was going to be okay in life, I needed to rely entirely on myself. So for a couple, probably 3 years, I worked these various jobs. It was during one of those jobs, actually working for a guy called Mervyn. And Mervyn, if you can picture this, it was about 6.5 foot tall. He had jet white hair and a flowing white beard, and I'm not making it up. And I was his assistant, and he basically saw in me something that he called out, and he said, Anna, you should go back to studying. You should go and go to university even. So I think over time I'd started to believe in myself more, and believed that I was capable of more, because through my work life, I was always being given more responsibility, difficult things to manage, difficult people sometimes to manage. And so I think by that stage, I'd thought, yes, do you know, I am capable of more than I'm doing. So I made an agreement with myself that I would attempt to get to university. It took me 2 years of working and doing evening classes to get my A-levels, and then finally applying to go to uni, and I was accepted. And when I left that job, Mervyn, the same guy, he gave me a cheque and said to me, this is to go towards your future education, spend it wisely. And I just think, wow, looking back, he was such a catalyst in me, making some really important changes in life. So 3 years after the fact, I had left university, I had a first class honours degree and had enrolled on a master's course, and no small thing, had given my life to Jesus. And through incidentally, somebody on the same course as me who invited me along to an Alpha course, and the rest really is history. But suffice to say, that period in my life was incredibly transformative. So moving on to my stroke hour present, there's no secret formula to experiencing more of God in our lives. That really sounds simple, but I think in some regards it is. It's literally about spending time with him each day, acknowledging his presence, and living in close relationship with him. And just as you would do with any person that you love and respect, you by spending time with them, you grow to be more like them. And the way we spend time with God is probably different for each of us, but the essential thing is that we spend time with him. The truth of who we are and the fullness we are striving for can be found when we continually abide in him. God keeps us moving into the purposes he set before us. He causes us to expand and grow. The opposite of expansion is to live small, and that is not the life that God has for me or for you. Some weeks ago, I was asked to give a prophetic word at a friend's wedding. As I spoke out what I felt God had given me for them, I felt the old familiar nerves kicking in and my hands were shaking. And it wasn't helped by the fact that I hadn't taken my reading glasses, so I'd had to call out to the congregation and ask to borrow a pair. And so these glasses were passed to me, and they belonged to an elderly gentleman, which was very kind of him. But it did mean that I could read what I had written, but I couldn't actually see the bride or groom. The lenses were so thick. But yes, I say this because when I sat down after reading to them, I felt quite deflated and frustrated with myself, because I felt like I'd fallen short of the mark. It wasn't about me, it was about them, it was their wedding day. But you know, when you're asked to do something and you want to do it justice and you feel like perhaps you haven't, it's so frustrating. But yet I refuse to let that experience hold me back, and I'm going to keep pushing myself out there until maybe there comes a day when I don't feel overcome with nerves when asked to do something like that. Or maybe I always will, but I'll just keep doing it anyway. I share this because each of you will have something that has the potential to hold you back. And a life with God is about going further than you ever thought possible, to uncover the full truth of who you are and the fullness you are striving for. Because he is with us, we can aim our sights on gold, for first prize, not for second or third, or a medal for taking part even, but we can go for the gold. Possibly due to my wiring or life experiences, or both. I'm someone who refuses to live in fear. So if there is something that causes me anxiety, I will refuse to let it take hold and to control me. And I'll just give you an example. Here we are. This piece of plastic, can you read it? Is it upside down? Anyway, this piece of plastic represents the sum total of my fears. Back in October last year, I went to the Tewkesbury Mop Fair with my daughter, Nora. Now, if you don't know what it is, the Mop Fair used to be a medieval hiring fair in Tewkesbury. But nowadays, it's a massive fun fair that sprawls all the way through the town. And I'd gone with Nora, and she is a complete, for anyone who knows her, you will agree that she is a complete daredevil and will make a beeline to the most ricketyest, most terrifying, highest ride that there is. And of course, asked me to go on it with her. So an hour later, and she'd been on everything twice and begged me to go with her each time. And I'd said, sorry, no, I just can't do it. And by the end of the evening, I said to her, OK, Nora, I'll make you a promise. When the Mop Fair comes next October, so that's this October, I promise I will come on the highest ride that there is. And to seal the promise, I bought this token, which looks at me every day and fills me with absolute dread. The days are ticking by, and at some point I'm going to have to face that fear or break the promise, which I've got no intention of doing. And so a bit of a daft example, but I think it's very representative of some of the very real fears that are in many of us. Perhaps we've made promises to ourselves or to others to conquer something that holds us back. And perhaps it's becoming more pressing that we do something about it. And one of the things about fear is that you may actually have to conquer it over and over again and in different ways, because it presents differently in different circumstances. So going back to my friend's wedding, at the drinks reception afterwards, I was given a prophetic word by somebody I'd not met before, but they had been at the service and they said to me that they had seen, as I was speaking, they had seen me wearing a robe of rocks, and that as I was speaking, the rocks were falling off of me to reveal a crimson gown underneath. There were other things to that, other parts to the word about God being pleased with me and pleased with my obedience and whatnot. But I share it because to me, this picture really represents what it means to be to not let your fears hinder you in doing the things He's asking you to do. And crimson, incidentally, which I looked up, is a symbolic colour for courage. So I just share that with you because I think it's just a really helpful picture. So moving on to the next slide with Ant Middleton screaming in the faces of a few celebrities there. This slide's from the show Who Dares Wins, the Channel 4 show, where the contestants over a pretty intense period face challenges like jumping backwards into the sea, like climbing over a high ravine or a ravine over a, no, sorry, climbing a high wire over a very deep ravine, like being put in confined spaces, and like actually having to share their personal backstories and vulnerabilities with the show hosts and others. Interestingly, they always give most airspace to the people with the biggest phobias. And so the picture unfolds throughout the weeks of the contestants confronting their worst fears and stepping out of their places of comfort. Tim and I, we watch it as a family, and we always agree that the most interesting parts of the show are when people are vulnerable enough to reveal bits of themselves and to explain, give their explanations or reasons for being there and facing the challenges, the physical challenges that they're going through. So I was thinking about the title, Who Dares Wins, and I thought you could change that with God to Who Trusts Wins. because some of the physical challenges faced by the contestants, I think, can be compared to our journey through life with God, that metaphorical rope bridge above a high ravine, where we're tempted to stay on the one side, on solid ground, and yet we know that God's the other side of it, spurring us on. He's holding out his hands to us, and he's eager to celebrate our courage and our successes. And even if we trip and we're left hanging by the safety wire, dangling, he still celebrates. He still celebrates our courage. So I'm going to say the invitation to trust and to grow is a consistent one. And there will be pitfalls and stumbles along the way because we're human. Winston Churchill famously said, "Success is not final, failure is not fatal. It is the courage to continue that counts." And it's often the failures or missteps, or when we're left dangling by the safety wire, that we that give us the opportunity to grow up, to mature, to change our thinking, to learn some really valuable lessons, and sometimes to alter the course of the trajectory. The trajectory to alter the path that we're on. I've heard it said that people who have never allowed themselves to fall are off balance. Think about learning to ride a bike. You fall numerous times before you begin to learn what balance feels like. And if we remain off balance, our journeys are always going to feel slightly precarious. However, if we submit our failings or missteps to God and integrate them into ourselves and understand and grasp the reality that our past, present, and futures are secure, then we can move forward in confidence. And let's face it, every time we get back on the bike is an act of courage. Thomas Merton, who was a monk in the 19, well, he, I think he was around from the early 1900s to the 1960s. And at some stage, he wrote this: "We can spend our whole life climbing the ladder of success, only to find that when we reach the top, the ladder is leaning against the wrong wall." Perhaps sometimes it's necessary to stop climbing, maybe to rest for a while and recalibrate, and perhaps even to switch ladders, even though we're halfway up. And I know this can feel like a precarious thing to do, but perhaps it's necessary sometimes to switch the ladder in order to realign ourselves with the purposes that God has before us. See, God won't allow us to languidly climb the wrong ladder, and sometimes it takes a slip or a stumble or a misstep to embrace the possibility of change. M. Scott Peck, in his book, which I read years ago, The Road Less Travelled, he says, unless a failing happens, we will stay the path of least resistance. So our fear of failure can easily prevent us from taking a step of faith. But God is with us throughout every step and every misstep. So on to my stroke, our future. In his letter to the Philippians, Paul tells them that there has never been the slightest doubt in my mind that God, who started this great work in you, would keep at it and bring it to a flourishing finish. There will be bits of us that he's working on all the time. So whilst it's good not to get hung up on the past, it's helpful to look back and see how far we have come, to recognise and celebrate the golden threads of God's handiwork throughout our journeys, and to let ourselves off the hook for not being perfect. So this fortune cookie I had a couple of weeks ago, this was what came out of it for me, which did make me laugh. Again, going forward, we can continue to read old report cards of ourselves, and sometimes others, if we're honest. Or we can believe what God is speaking over us today in this very moment. Whilst writing this talk, I had a picture in my mind's eye of an old school blackboard, and yesterday's lesson had been rubbed away by the board rubber. But you know how you can still see remnants of bits of writing on the board? And my sense was that some people in the classroom were still looking and looking at and scrutinising the little bits of chalk that were left behind from yesterday's lesson. And to me, that spoke of how we can get hung up on looking at the past, focusing on the past, instead of fixing our eyes, looking at what God is doing in the here and now and what he has planned for us in the future. The slate is wiped clean, we're always told, time and again throughout scripture. And in my own life, I often have, when I need to hear this, I will have a picture of one of those old, I don't know if you can still buy them now, but as a child we had these things called an Etch-a-Sketch. And whenever it comes to mind, it's always to remind me that the slate is completely wiped clean, completely, not just in part. And when they get a bit old or tired or broken, bits of the old aluminium behind the screen can get stuck. So it doesn't function. It doesn't completely, when you pull the slider along, it doesn't completely wipe the screen clean. And I feel like we can be like that in our journeys and in our view of our lives, that we can, instead of looking at the clean screen that God tells us we've got, we can be looking at the little bits of debris and getting fixated on those. And you know, just to say that although we can so easily fixate on our flaws and imperfections, that is not who God is, and that's not what he does. He has been weaving golden threads throughout our entire backstories. And then I had this phrase that I'll share with you, and it is that we are not just getting by with bits of old stories stuck to us. God tells us that whilst other people might look at the outward appearance, he does not make those kinds of judgments. He says, to me, it is your heart that matters most. And still we scrutinise our lives. Like prospectors, instead of panning for gold, we're looking for all the gritty, ugly bits. We need to look for the gold that's placed in each of us. When I visit the Baileys' home, it's always a pleasure, and they're wonderful hosts, but I'm always astounded by the perfection of Mark's lawn. He keeps that lawn so incredibly well. It is a thing of perfection. But as any gardeners here will testify, gardening is not an exact science. There has to be room for unexpected outcomes, and sometimes things not going quite the way we had anticipated. So it is with the soul's journey. There is a quote that I read this morning, in fact, that says, you get to the truth not by crafting the outcome. You get to the truth not by crafting the outcome. So kind of leaving room for the unexpected, the mystery, the sometimes unexplained, but trusting God anyway. So we're all works in progress, given to imperfections and navigating our way through. Take these homegrown veg. Do you think the person that planted the seed expected this to be the fruit of their labours? Firstly, we have the carrot that thinks it's Buzz Lightyear. Secondly, we have this happy chappy that I think is an apple. And finally, we have Sylvester Stallone's lesser known twin. They really, yeah, made me laugh. Perfectionism seeks to control every outcome and leaves little room for applying faith or engaging in the mystery. And admittedly, the mystery can sometimes leave us perplexed. Why did this happen? Why hasn't this happened? I trusted, I stepped out, I failed. Why? So many questions. Why? But the truth is that God is still weaving his golden handiwork throughout, even when we can't see it or begin to understand the process. I've got this other phrase that I've been living with, which is, make your home in the river of mystery. The sense is that we all we have to do is get into the river. That's it. Trust in the direction that the river is flowing. Get caught up in the flow that is heading towards a powerful sea of love and compassion downstream. The bravest thing we can do in the world sometimes is not to cling to old ideas for fear, but to step out into something new and to trust in the flow. In God, there is freedom to embrace all of our story, the history of us that is continually being redeemed and made new. The invitation extended to us today and always is to trust that a new word is being spoken about us, whilst remembering that our backstory contains powerful testimony. So celebrate the path you have walked, that you are not where you were 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago. You are somewhere on a journey. You are reaching out time and again and trusting that God's got you. And the story isn't over until all has been restored and redeemed, the whole and not just the parts. A couple of weeks back, Malcolm spoke about how after the 5,000 had been fed, the disciples went round and gathered up the fragments, and he used it as a beautiful illustration to remind us of how God cares about the fragments, the discards. And so I just want to say again that all the fragments of our lives are gathered up into God. He holds together all the seemingly disparate and fragmented parts of our lives. He fills in all the gaps. He owns all the mistakes. He forgives all the failures, and he loves us into our most whole selves if we let him. So in closing, I will say again, go for the gold. Recognize the threads of God's golden handiwork in your past, present, and your future. Gold is such a strong word over this church. Amongst other things, obviously, it's representative of restoration, and I really believe that that's a strong part of the DNA of Encounter Church is restoration, people's lives, marriages, finances, whatever it might be. We see it happening, restoration. To be restored is to receive back more than has been lost, and so that the final state is greater than the original condition and is enriched beyond measure. And that's what we want, isn't it? We want to be restored and redeemed beyond the original state that we were in, to be enriched beyond measure. That's what we want, and that's what a life in God promises us if we stick with him. So in closing, I'll say, God, help us to develop a vision that reads between the lines of our sometimes messy and confusing stories, and one that finds the gold in each of ours and in others' lives, to see and to celebrate your gloriously redemptive work and constant, unceasing presence in our stories. I ask that anything less than thriving in our lives would show itself, and that we will go from glory to glory, and that we would go for the gold. Amen.